the traditional grassroots power that we have always been able to mobilize, you know, may not be able to break through that huge amount of money and lobbying interests that are happening.
As Congress prepares to open ANWR, environmentalists try to figure out what went wrong. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, December 19th. Good evening. I'm Zachariah Hughes. Also tonight, Juno tries auditing 17 years worth of untested rape kits.
That helps identify serial rapists and that moves us closer to justice.
Stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education offers the Family Education Loan so parents, a spouse, or grandparents can help students with the cost of college or training programs in or outside of Alaska. Interest rates are lower than the federal plus, and no credit is required. For more information, call 800-441-2962 or visit acpe.alaska.gov/radio. This message sponsored by the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education.
After 40 years of fighting about it, Congress is on the verge of opening the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge to oil development. The U.S. House passed an ANWR measure today in its tax bill. The Senate is likely to pass it this evening. Then the bill goes back to the House for one more vote tomorrow before heading to the president for his signature. Assuming all goes as expected, this is a major win for Alaska's congressional delegation and a big loss to environmental groups. Conservationists were able to defeat all previous ANWR drilling bills. Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin asks why they were powerless to stop this one.
Thousands of people rallied earlier this month on the north side of the Capitol. But ignore that huge crowd because it has nothing to do with the Arctic Refuge. That was about immigration.
Speak with me here. Call out. Protect the Arctic Refuge. Protect the Arctic Refuge. Protect
the Arctic. On the west side of the Capitol that day, a much smaller group of activists called for the preservation of the Arctic Refuge. The event was billed as a prayer vigil. Bernadette Dementiev, director of the Gwich'in Steering Committee, calls the coastal plain of the refuge a sacred place.
We just want to continue to have our food security, to have healthy land, to have healthy animals to hunt.
Few reporters were watching. The mood was somber. It's a stunning reversal of fortunes for environmentalists. They won so many times on the Arctic Refuge, sometimes they seemed invincible. To see how hard it used to be to convince Congress to allow drilling in the refuge, look at 2005. That year, the political climate seemed perfect for oil development. For the first time, average gas prices soared above $2 a gallon. America was importing more petroleum than ever, and U.S. troops were fighting in Iraq, a war many said was about oil. So the argument that America needed ANWR's oil, that had some pull. And yet,
this has been the saddest day of my life.
In December 2005, Alaska's then-Senator Ted Stevens was crushed he didn't have the votes to keep ANWR in a defense spending bill. He had attached billions of dollars to the drilling measure to win votes. Billions to help victims of Katrina, to fortify the borders, to help low-income families, to help farmers and ranchers. In a dramatic, bitter speech on the Senate floor, Stevens told his colleagues he had funneled money so elaborately, it was a feat that could never be repeated.
To take out of the bill all of this money that we worked so hard to find a way to justify it. We took future revenues coming into the Treasury, held them in the Treasury, and earmarked them for specific purposes when arrived.
Stevens had that much sway over the federal budget, and it wasn't enough. When conservation groups won the 2005 round on the refuge, the Sierra Club's Melinda Pierce told a reporter that might be it. Game, set, match.
If Stevens failed to get his pet project done with all the stars aligned, high gas prices, war in Iraq, Republican control of all bodies of Congress, it's going to be hard for him to get it done ever.
Fast forward 12 years. Pierce is still at the Sierra Club, only now she's losing. Pierce says this year the refuge fight is overshadowed by other controversies, including the specifics of the tax changes.
The traditional grassroots power that we have always been able to mobilize really may not, you know, may not be able to break through that huge amount of money and lobbying interests that are happening.
And there are fewer members of Congress to direct that power to, fewer moderate Republicans. At League of Conservation Voters, Tiernan Sittenfeld says when she started working in Washington in 2000, the House had 30 or 40 Republicans who might vote with the Democrats on environmental issues. She says their insistence is the reason Arctic drilling didn't slide through on a fast-track budget bill in 2005.
A lot of those Republicans either were retired or they were defeated by Democrats in 2006 and 2008. Many of those Democrats were then defeated by Tea Party Republicans in 2010. So it is a more polarized time now, for sure, when it comes to environmental issues.
This time, 11 House Republicans wrote a letter asking for ANWR to be removed from the tax bill, but most voted for the bill in the end. Retired lobbyist Roger Herrera doesn't know why ANWR is passing now and so quietly.
The frustrations over the last 20 or 30 years, political frustrations with trying to open the coastal plain, have been pretty extreme on times.
Herrera worked to open the refuge for most of his career, first at BP, then as director of Arctic Power, an ANWR drilling lobby that was active for more than two decades. The state of Alaska spent about $12 million on Arctic Power over the years to fight for votes in Congress. The group has been dormant for a few years, but ANWR is passing anyway. Herrera wonders if environmental groups just quit trying so hard.
In a way, one doesn't mind how it happens.
Environmental groups insist they're giving it all they've got. Sittenfeld says League of Conservation Voters will work the Hill to the last minute. Even if the bill is signed into law, she says they'll fight on, with lawsuits, pressure on oil companies, and maybe, she said, a new bill in Congress. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Governor Bill Walker's Climate Change Task Force met for the first time Monday in downtown Anchorage. The 20-person team, formed by the governor this fall, is supposed to come up with a list of recommendations for how the state should respond to climate change. But as Rachel Waltholz from Alaska's Energy Desk reports, the task force is facing questions before it even begins.
During the day-long meeting, team members expressed a combination of fear and hope. Fear at how fast the natural world is changing, but hope that climate change might turn out to be as much an opportunity as it is a risk. Isaac Vanderberg, who runs the Anchorage business accelerator Launch Alaska, called it the greatest wealth creation opportunity the world has ever seen, if Alaska can seize the moment. Meanwhile, Ralph Anderson, head of the Bristol Bay Native Association, said the issue that's gotten his attention is erosion.
We're seeing way too many of our villages wash into the sea. We're losing schools, power plants.
Former state lawmaker and Northwest Arctic Borough Mayor Reggie Jewell encouraged the group to be realistic about its recommendations. He said promises have been made to Alaska communities in the past, especially on issues like village relocation. This time, Jewell said, he'd like a frank discussion of what actions can really be taken and who will pay for it.
Or whether or not they can be paid for at any level. I've seen communities that have been hanging out there thinking that somebody's going to pay for their move. Are we really?
Several team members have been here before, 10 years ago, when then-Governor Sarah Palin created a similar climate change task force. Molly McCammon of the Alaska Ocean Observing System says the last decade has only made things more urgent.
The difference now is the rapidity of the change. I think 10 years ago, we thought there was going to be more time to prepare and respond to things. Now, I mean, we're really facing some really immediate changes, and it's just happening so much faster that we need to be able to act faster.
One big question is whether the team will be able to build support for whatever recommendations they come up with, not least from state lawmakers. In an indication of how hard that might be, Nikiski Republican Mike Chenault issued a blistering press release Tuesday, complaining that the task force doesn't include enough representation from business leaders and the resource industries. He said that leaves the team with an obvious left-leaning foundation. The task force includes just one representative from the oil and gas industry, BP Alaska President Janet Weiss, and none from mining or timber. It does include two representatives from commercial fishing, along with current and former local and tribal officials, representatives from the University of Alaska and other research organizations, several members with experience in renewable energy, and one from an environmental group. Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott, who's chairing the task force, defended its makeup and noted that the Walker administration has also taken heat from environmentalists for not moving fast enough. The task force is supposed to deliver formal recommendations by September 2018. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Rachel Waldholtz in Anchorage.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, for the first time in over three decades, Juneau is taking a team to the Native Youth Olympics.
I don't think I would be as involved with my community if I didn't get into Native Games. I don't think I'd be as concerned with my health and my fitness.
That is ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Colder temperatures are here, and the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation reminds you of the danger of carbon monoxide, a poisonous gas that you can't see or smell. If it builds up in your home, it can be deadly. Be safe this winter and have a qualified mechanic ensure your heating system is working properly. Never run your car in the garage or operate a portable generator in an enclosed space. Finally, always ensure your home has a working carbon monoxide detector. This message sponsored by AHFC.
A federal appeals court panel has ordered a new trial for a man convicted in the 2012 killing of two co-workers at a Coast Guard communication station in Alaska. A three-judge panel of the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals says James Wells did not receive a fair trial. The Tuesday decision reversed Wells' conviction on murder and weapons charges. Members of the panel took issue with the government challenging the appointment of a second attorney to help represent Wells, saying it carried a, quote, reproachable air of stacking the deck, end quote. The panel also found the lower court erred in permitting the use of certain testimony. The panel found the case should be reassigned, citing comments the judge made at Wells' sentencing, though was split on that particular issue. Juneau Police Department officials say they're auditing all sexual assault kits that have been stored and left unprocessed in the last 17 years. KTOO's Matt Miller has this report.
During a recent meeting of a city task force on public safety, city and police officials provided some context for an issue that was highlighted in a recent Juneau Empire article. Juneau was singled out for having one of the biggest so-called backlogs of unprocessed kits. Deputy City Manager Milo Cosgrove says a total of 374 kits have been collected since 2000. Of those, 171 were sent to the State Crime Laboratory in Anchorage for processing. The other 203 were not processed for a variety of reasons, and Cosgrove says that included the district attorney's office deciding not to prosecute a case. Perhaps the victim or suspect died, or maybe both people knew each other and both said that there was sexual activity.
And the issue is not whether or not activity occurred, but whether or not that activity is consensual or not.
Deputy Chief Dave Campbell says he's about a third of the way through an audit of the 203 unprocessed kits tied to a total of 172 cases. In some instances, kits were collected from the victim and a suspect in a single case. Campbell told task force members that over 100 of those cases were actually referred to the district attorney's office, but in some instances, the kit may have been unnecessary for prosecution. In addition, there were unprocessed kits for 32 cases, but in those cases, allegations were determined to be unfounded. Unprocessed kits for just over 50 cases were labeled as inactive for various other reasons, such as the death of the victim or suspect.
All the ones so far that I've looked at, I understand why the decision was made to make it an inactive case. I haven't found any yet during the audit that are like, wow, this should have been sent off and it hasn't been.
Still, Sarah Lynn Tabachnik, executive director of AWARE, is concerned about the impact on victims from those 203 unprocessed kits.
So there's an expectation that going through a rape kit, which can be a traumatic experience, there's an expectation that something's going to come from that, that the rape kit will be processed, right? And so that it's not, I think, is problematic.
Campbell told task force members that he'd prefer all of the unprocessed kits still be sent on to the state crime lab for analysis. Tabachnik agrees.
You know, that validates the victim, that helps identify serial rapists, and that moves us closer to justice.
In June, Governor Bill Walker signed Senate Bill 55 into law, requiring an audit of untested sexual assault kits. As of November, Campbell says the state crime lab asked them to send all new kits to them for analysis or storage. The lab will ask later for the so-called backlog of the 203 unprocessed kits. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Matt Miller.
Contract negotiations for teachers in the Matanuska-Susitna Borough School District are stalled after months of talks. As Alaska Public Media's Casey Grove reports, the teachers' union and the school district are headed to mediation sometime early next year.
The negotiations had been underway since February, but early last month, the Matsu Teachers Union and the school district both declared an impasse after failing to reach an agreement. Tim Walters is president of the Matsu Education Association, which represents about 1,200 teachers. He says school district negotiators refused to budge from their initial offer.
We've really still seen no movement from the district whatsoever. Their response has been that they would like to reduce the district's deficit through negotiations. So they're asking all the teachers in the valley to take a step backwards.
Walter says the district's offer is to pay teachers for 3 fewer days per school year than their last contract. Among other sticking points, he also says the district wants to reduce its contribution to the teachers' health trust, which would result in teachers paying about $2,100 more per year for health insurance. Walters says class sizes in the Matsu are already higher than in comparable school districts, and that finding and keeping qualified teachers is getting more difficult.
I understand times are tough, but I don't think that the cost of increases to education should rest solely on the backs of teachers.
Student enrollment in the district has grown, while school funding from both the state and borough remained flat. And 2 recent efforts to increase school funding in the borough failed. One measure would have put a borough-wide sales tax proposal before voters in an upcoming election. The idea of instituting a sales tax has not gone away, and the school district superintendent sits on the task force looking into a sales tax. School district spokesperson Jillian Morrissey says the district's largest cost after teacher salaries is health insurance, which costs $40 million annually for all of its employees.
Our school board is mandating that the administration look at that cost for their fiduciary responsibility, make sure that we're getting the best deal possible.
Despite having hit an impasse in the negotiations, Morrissey says the district is ready for mediation. That's when an independent, federally appointed mediator steps in to help with negotiations between the union and school district. If mediation fails, the negotiations would head to arbitration. But arbitration in Alaska is non-binding, so if that also fails, the teachers' union could still decide to strike. Walters, the union president, says if a strike were to happen, it wouldn't be until next school year, if at all. In Anchorage, I'm Casey Grove.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Wells Fargo, with over 13,000 ATMs and more than 6,000 branches coast to coast. For a branch location near you, visit wellsfargo.com. Did you know while exposed to secondhand smoke, every breath you take can damage your heart? Cells lining blood vessels become swollen and inflamed. Plaque builds narrowing blood vessels and clots can form, robbing the heart of oxygen. Exposure to secondhand smoke increases your heart disease risk by up to 30%. It's your heart protected. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline, 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
If you love what you hear on your public radio station, consider becoming a member.
Every year, hundreds of students from around the state gather in Anchorage for the Native Youth Olympics. But Juneau hasn't sent a team in more than 30 years. KTOO's Adeline Baxter explains why a local athlete is working to change that.
And remember, sometimes it helps to pull with this foot. So you're going to hop up, kick the ball, and land. Keep your balance.
On a Saturday afternoon, athletes are gathered in a gym on the University of Alaska Southeast campus. A small, furry ball hangs from a pole about 5 feet off the ground. One by one, athletes position themselves beneath it, squatting on one foot while holding the other with their hand. They push off suddenly, kicking one foot into the air above their head in a kind of pretzel handstand. Their foot meets the furry ball, leaving it swinging as they fall back to the ground. This is the Alaskan High Kick, one of the main events in the Native Youth Olympics. The statewide competition highlights strength, agility, and in some cases, pain endurance. Now, for the first time since 1983, Juno is putting together a team. Kyle Worrell is the coach and leader behind the effort.
The long-term goal is to introduce Native Youth Olympics as a sport in the high school at the same level as any other sport, where students can take part in this year after year, and they can travel to state regionals just like other events.
Since the fall, he's been visiting Juno's high schools and recruiting students. About a dozen of them practice twice a week at each school, mastering the events they hope to compete in at the state competition in April. Sportsmanship is central to the games. Worrell said it's part of what drew him to Native Youth Olympics.
The games, in a sense, are very individualistic since you're competing against yourself, but they're done in a community setting. So you have all the other athletes around you, and they're there to help you and support you.
Worrell didn't get into Native sports until he was a senior in high school, but now he competes with other adults every year. He routinely medals and holds a world record for an event similar to the high kick. This winter, he'll demonstrate several Native games at the National Museum of the American Indian in Washington, D.C.
I don't think I would be as involved with my community if I didn't get into Native games. I don't think I'd be as concerned with my health and my fitness, and that's something that Native games has given me, is that motivation to stay in shape, to always challenge myself, to build my personal bests in each game.
Ricardo Worrell, Kyle's uncle, was Juno's coach back in the 80s. He said the games offer an alternative to typical high school sports, but there's more to it.
The other important reason to have Native Youth Olympics in the schools is for the Native, even though it's open to non-Natives, is for the Native kids, and it's for that Native identity. It's athletic, it's positive, it's actually kind of cool.
Tryouts for the team are March 30th and 31st. Worrell said he hopes to bring between 10 and 20 high school students to Anchorage, so he plans to step up recruitment after winter break. They'll also look for ways to pay for the trip. The team will fundraise and search for local sponsors. The Sea Alaska Heritage Institute is already helping out. In Juneau, I'm Madeline Baxter.
In many parts of Alaska, seniors have trouble accessing proper medical care and finding doctors who accept Medicare. This problem does not have a solution yet. Organizations across the state are working on it. Others are trying to make the need less pressing through prevention. Ann Hillman with Alaska Public Media's Solutions Desk learned about one simple thing making elders stronger.
Outside the Anchorage Senior Activity Center, melting snow drips off the roof onto the icy walkways. Inside, Eileen Apodaca joins three other women in the dimly lit exercise room for Tai Chi practice. Facing a wall of mirrors, Apodaca patiently teaches me her moves, like monkey stealing peaches.
Okay, grab your peaches, hold them tight, and tighten everything.
She pantomimes reaching down, grabbing something, then tightening up every muscle in her body as she clutches the imaginary peach against her belly. The next set of poses require her to shift her balance and her weight from leg to leg as she turns, moving her arms around her. The motions of the 3,000-year-old Chinese martial art seem slow and delicate. And for 71-year-old Apodaca, they've made a huge difference.
I was falling down a lot 3 years ago. And when I started doing this, I haven't fallen down.
Apodaca had polio as a child, which impacted her legs. As she's gotten older, the lingering effects have made it harder for her to get around. Her physical therapist recommended she try Tai Chi because the movements aren't strenuous, but they provide a whole body workout. Some research says it helps overall health, too.
Do you find you're not getting as sick as much?
Yeah. Of course, I'm not around kindergartners anymore either.
Apodaca taught elementary school for 44 years. Falling is a huge issue for older people. According to the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services, it's the number one cause of injuries for Alaskans who are 65 and older. Falling led to 1,600 hospitalizations in 2015, each of which cost about $55,000. And falls can lead to more health problems. Healing is harder when you're older. Brittany Mitchell, the fitness supervisor for the Anchorage Senior Activity Center, says some people have physical improvements very quickly. One woman said it took only a week of working on the exercise machines to help her limp. Others have steadily improved their balance over time through dance-focused classes.
It's very rare when I have people from dance cardio fall anymore. Mm-hmm. And if it is, it's for something very silly like a dog.
Tripping over pets is a major cause of falling. Area rugs on hardwood floors and slippery bathroom surfaces cause problems too. In fact, even in ice-covered Alaska, most falls happen in the home when people aren't being as cautious. But exercise options are doing more than just keeping seniors upright. They're helping them connect. Isolation and loneliness can cause health problems too. Friendships prevent that.
Our treadmill walkers like to watch the people in the parking lot. And so they just strike up the conversation of they like someone's shoes. And then I've definitely seen so many friendships grown here where people exchange phone numbers.
Those friendships are part of what keeps Apodaca coming back to class.
And the camaraderie of our group, we've just really gelled as a group. We go out to lunch and stuff.
She says overall, she feels more positive. The exercises haven't solved all of her problems, of course. She still worries about getting around, like going to a friend's house for dinner.
I'm already having anxiety about how am I going to walk up her driveway, especially in the ice. And how am I going to get up her stairs carrying a casserole?
Apodaca knows she can't do everything she wants to, like climb stairs. But she's more confident in getting around in her day-to-day life.
You just have to have an attitude about what you're capable of and what you're not capable of. And you can't grieve it. You just move on and do what you can and be positive.
She says working out helps her do that. From the Solutions Desk, I'm Ann Hillman.
That is all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we are online at alaskapublic.org. Like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media. Follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Casey Grove and Ann Hillman and Rachel Waltholz in Anchorage, Madeline Baxter and Matt Miller in Juneau. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor, and I am Zachariah Hughes. Have a great night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
BP. BP believes that Alaskans know their state best and invests in recruiting and hiring from their own backyard. 78% of the BP employees who work here live in Alaska. BP.com/Alaska.
Older Persons Action Group publishes Senior Voice, Alaska's only statewide publication for seniors, and is an excellent source of information for families and caregivers. SeniorVoiceAlaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
Opioids are common prescription pain relievers and must be used properly to avoid danger. Common opioids include hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, fentanyl, and codeine. Safely getting rid of unused opioid medication prevents children and pets from accidental poisoning and protects the environment. Information about safe opioid storage and proper disposal is at opioids.alaska.gov. This message is sponsored by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Planning today for a gift down the road builds a legacy of support for the media you treasure. Thank you for considering this public radio station in your estate planning. You can talk to your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more. Thank you. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.